You've entered the Kill Zone.
The Kill Zone.
Frontline Gaming presents the Kill Zone Podcast. Real talk for competitive Kill Team 40K. Tactics. Strategy. And news you need to know from some of today's top players. Tune in every other week for brand new episodes of the Kill Zone Podcast.
You're listening to the Killzone Podcast of the Frontline Gaming Network. Buy a mat. Link in the description. The podcast is your home for real talk for competitive kill team. Welcome to the show. My name's Chris. Some folks call me Bearnid, and I'm joined by Emmanuel Mitsunikos from Strategic Advantage on YouTube. You should go subscribe to him right now. We've got a great show for you coming up today.
Today, we're covering three main faction archetypes in kill team with an overview of what they are and how they function. This is a key concept to help you understand the different teams in this game, and if you're hearing about this for the first time, this will be an episode that changes how you think of teams forever after.
Ooh, spicy. So stay tuned, because all that is coming your way after we pay some bills with these messages. I gotta say, Emmanuel, that Geller field actually did the trick. The guardsman stuck and my wall is no longer bleeding and glowing with warp energy.
Yeah, and it's really let me focus on this kit from Pop Goes the Monkey. No distractions now. I'm just about done.
Ooh, you're talking about the Brew Guzzlers Buccaneers conversion kit? The one that converts a monopose Orc Boys box into the Commandos Freebooters themed kill team?
Yeah, that's the one. I gotta say, I've had a blast putting this team together, and I've had even more fun painting them up. I'm really excited to get these on the table.
I gotta say, I've been following your progress, and every time I see one of your finished pirate commandos, it blows me away that the model started out as a regular boy from the Orc Boys kit.
Seriously. Yeah, once I finished the initial build of the kit, I lined up all the models next to the box art, and it was really hard to see. They barely resemble the original boys kit at all.
That just speaks volumes to the amount of bits that you get with the kit, allowing you to really customize these boys and really transform them.
And Orktober isn't over yet. With Orktober comes a deep sale on the Brew Guzzlers Buccaneers Commandos conversion kit, as well as the Horkins Heroes kit, which is a spin on Hogan's Heroes.
Ooh, that's right. And if you're listening to this on the day of release, there's still time. Rush over to popgoesthemonkey.com to take advantage of the discount on these kits before it's too late.
And while you're there, check out the Warp Coven Rubric Marine Sorcerer Upgrade Kit, as well as the special limited edition model on popgoesthemonkey.com, the Great Orc Brewmaster Swill Agams, available through the end of the year to celebrate Orktoberfest 2022.
There's a link to all of these in the description below.
Thanks for sponsoring the podcast, Monkey.
And we're recording a podcast.
It's we certainly are. Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween, everybody!
Dressing up for Halloween, Chris?
I am. I'm going to be Bowser from the Mario video games, from Super Mario.
No kidding. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So my family looked at me and my round shape and decided, you know what? We've got this guy figured out. We've got the perfect costume.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Are you all doing a themed costume? I'm a sucker for themed costumes, so please say yes.
Yes. My wife is going to be Princess Peach. My there's going to be Mario. There's, it's a whole thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. We're doing a themed costume for us as well. First Halloween with our baby boy. So I had to make sure I thought of something that could be easy to include him. And I know most people are going to scoff at me when I say this, but it's going to be cold. So I wanted to make sure that baby boy was nice and warm. And the thing about me saying cold and people are going to scoff at it, it's going to be like 60s. That's cold for us. Leave us alone.
Yeah, it's California. You don't know
you
what
New
it's
Englanders
like.
And your seasons and snow. Old man yells at cloud right now. But I digress. So we went with now streaming on Netflix. So we chose shows that are on Netflix. My wife is going to be Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek. My baby and my dog are from Ghostbusters. And this all spawned off the idea of baby being... I saw a baby costume that was a Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. And you could tell how much a dad I've become. My first instinct was, that looks warm.
Yeah. Right.
And then I found a doggy costume, that's a Ghostbuster costume, which is really cute. And I'm going to be going as Eddie Munson from Stranger Things season 4. I have a portable battery powered amp as well, and I'm taking my Ibanez Q54 with me. So if anyone says Eddie Munson, it starts blah, 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 and I bust out the Master of Puppets. So
you're ready to go.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. Except I fully anticipate us walking out of the house and then all of a sudden the baby crying, needing a diaper change, and then all the plans are out the window. But hey, we'll at least get one photo. That's what I'm hoping for, just one photo.
Yeah, baby's at that great age where you get to eat the candy. You get to take him trick-or-treating, and then you go home, and he's too young for candy, you know? So what are you going to do?
My wife was playing with a baby the other day, and she was saying, "Can you say Kit Kat? Can you say trick or treat Kit Kat?" It's like, "Are you putting in an order?" It's like, "Well, he doesn't know what he likes, so we might as well make sure he likes the same chocolate as I do."
There you go.
Oh, that's funny. So you just finished SCO last week, huh?
Yeah, man. Crazy days. It was a great event. It was 3 days of kill team out by the ocean, basically. Mm-hmm. A lot of fun.
Hard to turn that down.
Yeah. Great time. Great time.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a lot of great games, and you won the pods day. Yeah, you took first on day one, huh?
Yeah, I took first day one and proceeded to get clobbered the rest of the weekend. The streak is dead. I took a loss, or I took a couple losses this weekend. So it ended at 19. That's who's going to beat me? Come on, listeners. Who's got more than 19 in the can? 19 consecutive tournament wins documented. Let's do this, everybody. But no, so I would have liked 20 for a nice even round number, but I proceeded
to start
to get...
up the it's time to start it up again.
I got one in the tank. One.
There you go. One you need to get one of those signs like they have like in warehouses, like it's been X games since a loss.
Yes, this long since accident. Exactly. No, man, I don't, these multi-day events, they get me so hard. I have a
They're
little
tough.
Condition, dude. It's this thing where I don't recover too well, like it's an exertion thing. I just like fall apart, and these guys, you know, are not playing around. You know, some of these these people playing these games, man, they're talented people.
I mean, your losses were quality losses. You lost to Alex, who won the whole darn thing. And then you ran into Robert, Craft World's Robert, who
yes,
he's a great player. And he's piloting Craft Worlds. And I just keep saying, like, anytime I talk to someone about this guy, I was like, you know, if he had a specialist team, he would be sweeping the floor because he pilots those Craft World guys with such ruthless precision. Like, he just doesn't make mistakes. And that is so clutch.
No, you get in there with a grenade and he's like perfectly spaced. You know, everybody's 2.1 inches apart. Like, damn it. You know? Yeah. It was funny because both our games were, the domination map mission, and it ended up being the exact same board both days. Mm-hmm. And it turns out he and his fast beats me and my fast.
This just in, elves go fast.
Yes, and it's by a significant margin as well. I got
right.
thoroughly pantsed in both of our games. Yeah. And, you know, hey, second go around, I learned something. I was able to score one more point from it, you know.
There you go.
But it was still a thorough beating. So, I'm not quite sure. You know, I don't have an answer to that at the moment.
Right. You just need to beat your head up against his Craft Worlds until you figure it out, right?
Yeah, man. The DZ starting 6 inches away, it's just like, whoop, you know. And, it was super spicy. And he leverages, like, his positioning and stuff, too. He was getting shots that I was like, damn, he really found that place. Also, in response, being hard to shoot, like, his positioning, you know, was like, and there's just this critical mass, which we'll talk about in a moment with the E-Life team, trademark Pat and Pendinga. But,
It's like you popped off the pickup and there's a PAF written on the back of the That is such a deep cut guitar joke.
Pure guitar reference.
Just look up PAF Les Paul and then you'll be bored out of your mind if you know nothing about guitar. Anyway, well, while you were down in San Diego by the ocean enjoying Kill Team, I was making tons of headway on My Pop Goes the Monkey kit. Yeah, middle of October, I just got slammed between life and work and all this kind of stuff. And I lost about 10 days of quality painting days. And I was like, oh no, I'm like counting the models. I'm counting the days left at the end of October. And I mean, there's no expectation that I finish these before October, except for the one that I put on myself.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to have the team and remember, it's like, ah, this is my kill team from October 2022. I did it. Got them all done.
Oh, yeah.
I got a full team done. I'm so proud of it. It's such a fun kit to put together. And what slowed me down a little bit, and I really enjoy doing this. I used to be stressed out about trying new techniques. Mm-hmm. On models that matter to me, like a one-off model or an important model or centerpiece model. But every single YouTuber that talks about like breaking through that kind of stress and that anxiety of trying a new technique always says, do it on your HQ, doing it on an important model. There's something about like the care and the precision that you put towards it when it really matters that really makes you focus and really like get a good painting fundamental down. So I never really wet blended a lot, and I wet blended a parrot.
Cool, man.
I wet blended a parrot. It's a parrot squig on the comms boy, and I could have done some stripes and all that kind of stuff to get the red, the orange, the yellow, the green, the blue, that kind of gradient down the back. Is that Birdman, is that a macaw? What kind of parrot thing is that? That's a macaw? Great.
In Espanol, it's a guacamaya.
Guacamaya? That's great with chips.
Yes, they are, funnily enough. Yes.
But, I said, it's like, no, I'm going to wet blend and I'm going to do a seamless gradient transition. And I'm only going to use the three colors and I'm going to blend those middle colors. I'm going to blend the red to the and the yellow into the orange, and I'm going to do the yellow to the blue blended with the green in the middle and just make a seamless transition. And I did it. My first time doing heat bloom, my first time doing like kind of scars and stuff like that to kind of have a blend of the skin to like a opaque area where the scar is, instead of just painting the scars red, like, oh, he just got cut as a caveat. Okay. Yeah. So doing a lot of new techniques, and I really enjoyed it because then I look at them, like I have memories from all these different models now of all the time I spent learning that new technique. And every time I wet blend, I'm going to be thinking about a squig macaw now. And it's great. I really enjoyed that process. And I can't wait to play more games with these guys. And honestly, folks, if you're listening on the release, go hustle, go get this kit, get the Horkins Heroes kit, or just get the small little bits, get them from popgoesthemonkey.com before you lose the discount. Today is the last day of their October sale, and then swing right over, like Chris said in the intro, buy a mat, but also buy your boys kit from Frontline Gaming. Use our link down below to get you there quicker. Make sure it's the Orc Boys, the new Monopoise kit. I got a message from someone on Instagram. He misunderstood and he's using the Commandos kit. And he's like, nothing matches up with the instructions, like the numbers and the guys and the poses. He's making it work. And he showed me some in progress stuff and he's kit bashing it together. No problem. So you can make it work, but it wasn't designed for it. So use the Orc Boys kit. Use the Orc Boys kit. You'll be much happier that way. But that being said, let's talk about this stuff. Like we have a really interesting episode. We've been talking about doing something like this for a while, and you might have heard Chris mention a few times calling stuff elites and elites and stuff like that, with kind of some vague, we've both given like a very very quick kind of definition of what this kind of stuff is, what we're referring to it as, just to kind of get onto the actual topic that we're talking about in that pod. But much like we kind of talked about easy, intermediate, and hard kill teams to learn and to play with, I think it's also really helpful to define these kind of archetypes because it'll also help a lot of us communicate better with y'all in the future as far as when we refer to it, it's like, oh yeah, this new team's coming out. It's a perfect Elite team that blah, 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 blah. And then then we're all speaking the same language, right? So
absolutely. Yeah,
it's a little bit more. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say it's useful. Other, you know, in addition to just knowing what something is, things like that, it's like a lot of this, these archetypes kind of have an inbuilt disposition that is useful mm-hmm. to understand because it's like,
yes.
oh, you know, some of your strategy in game is now going to be affected. And this is kind of like why, you know, you'll find somebody new to the game, doesn't have any of this info, comes in, you know, gets like 2-3 factions and one of them he or she is able to just carry to high highs as time mm-hmm. goes on. It's like, well, you probably, your inbuilt disposition matched that of the team probably. You know, mm-hmm, that, that's mm-hmm. like when we talk about their toolboxiness or things like that, it's just really interesting to have in there. You know, now it's like kind of, you may understand why certain things have clicked for you in the past and things
right.
of that nature.
Right.
And why certain teams are strong when you do X, Y, Z, you know, and why the same strategy may not apply from Space Marines to, you know, Corsairs or something like
sure.
that. Just interesting
Absolutely.
Stuff. Yep.
Yeah. That's really well put. That's really well put. So the three archetypes. So this is, I'm going to give you the big 35,000 foot view of this. And then we're going to go back and forth kind of focusing in on one of these three. So we have three types, the elites, mm-hmm. elites, and hordes. And broad strokes, it's like, okay, elites, small, elites, somewhere in the middle, hordes, big, right? There's so much more to it than just that. But if you want to put a number to it, elites are about 6 or less. So you get your custodies, you get your marine teams, that kind of stuff. Hordes,
yeah.
anywhere more than 11 would probably be a horde. Probably.
Yeah.
Effective word there. And anything in between 7 to 10, you could call an elite team. But much like everything, nothing, this isn't perfect, right? Like those numbers don't perfectly sum up whether something's elite, horde, because you can find a lot of edge cases that kind of straddle one side with the numbers, but play and have the disposition of another side
yeah.
based on what more about them solidifies them and whether they're elite or elite or horde. And that's hopefully what we'll convey over as we go
yeah.
through each of these individually today. So that way you'll be able to look at whatever comes about in the next box for Kill Team and immediately recognize it without waiting for us to talk about it.
Right. And you'll know kind of like, oh, this is the disposition. If I go in and I put this on this team on the field, this is kind of what I'm looking to accomplish and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, where I'm strong, where I'm weak, things like that. It's really useful for spot analysis. You know, maybe it's your mm-hmm. first time going against something. You see it on the other side of the board. It's like, how many models you got? Oh, okay. It's probably like this. And you kind of now have a insight into what you're going to experience in this game coming up.
Yeah. Well put. So do you want to tell me all about elites, Chris?
Sure. So the biggest thing that I would say about elite teams, there's one word that I would add. Yes, actually. That's,
big chonkers.
It wasn't intended. It was a happy accident.
Sorry.
But
still
a key.
Not sure about that.
Ooh.
Siri is not sure about that. Mind your own business, Siri. Go ahead, Chris.
But yeah, one of the big things about the elite teams, I would say first off, is that an elite team wants to flex. I think that their ideal expression, I would put ideal expression, not everyone's this way, you know, but you're looking at small team, 4 to 6 typically, with shooting and melee on each guy. This is the ideal.
Mm.
You want
mm-hmm.
shooting and melee on each guy. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So something like a Death Watch warrior, right?
Perfect.
He's got
yep.
a bolter and a power weapon. That is like the perfect definition of a flex model.
Exactly. Because in theory, now you are good where you find yourself, which being a small amount of guys on the board is really important, you know, and it also allows you to flex and be maybe contributing output, shooting, from also scoring an objective, you know. So there's, it's part of why you've seen me recommending like shooty elite builds this edition. is because, like, okay, a shooting Cessor, yes, he's shooty, but he's technically flex because he still has fists. And against non-dedicated melee models, hey, you've got a flex model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can kill stuff in melee, and he can shoot. So, boom, strong, strong thing. But yes, I would say these tend to have access to the highest levels of action economy. They have high APL, or like shooting twice or fighting twice, things like that. That's kind of a key component to these that you see, you know, carried over over multiple editions now. They tend to have great saves and durability in general. You know, they high wounds or good save or some combination thereof. But this is like where you see two up save and three up saves. You know, you don't really see a two up save on the other archetypes and stuff. And even in elites, that's kind of at a premium, right? I would say. But yeah, they just kind of like have stuff to ignore penalties to being injured or something like that. It's even if it's not inbuilt, it's like somewhere on the team. It's a tactic. It's a, you know, FNP, something to that effect, a piece of equipment, whatever. But yeah, so all of this adding up, the durability and the efficiency and, you know, being good where you find yourself, like being able to shoot and melee or whatever on an objective you're also scoring, this tends to make these stronger in the late game. Because if you look and you see, oh, I have three Tau left, he has three Marines left, who's going to win that game, you know, if it's like turn three or something to that effect? So it's just something that you kind of see. And this is in terms of points scoring, I would say, and board control. That's kind of what I mean by they're weaker in the early game, stronger in the late game. You know, it's not that they're inefficient and can't do nothing turn one. You know, yeah, it's just not where they really want to be.
Yeah. And it's almost like elite teams need to prevent getting outpaced as their main goal for turning points one and most into turning point two until they can make up for their lack of APL on the board. Because when you have six models with three APL each, that's a lot different than 14 models with two APL each, right? Even though each model has a lot more that each individual model can do, there's less APL total on the board to do mission actions, to open doors, to do all this kind of stuff, right? So they rely on paring down that APL and preventing a lot of getting outpaced, so that way they can score high later on. And my experience with folks like intercessors, right, playing with them and against them, is that it oftentimes just leads to low scoring games, right? It's all about that score compression. Every time I've followed a tournament on BCP, the games with intercession in it tend to be the lower scoring ones almost always. And in my experience playing with them and against them as well, it's always been that. It's always been about compression. And that's because of that tempo restriction early on to make sure that they can be viable late on.
Yeah, you make a good point because, you know, the other teams are trying to score really early, whereas like the Marines, they're kind of trying to simplify the board state, or the elite teams, I should say. They're kind of clearing out your chaff and, you know, taking out things that can just delete your one of six guys if it can see them and stuff like that, while they're kind of, you know, angling into position for things, you know,
that's a great
sooner rather than
it.
Later, hopefully.
Yeah. Simplifying the board state. I like that.
Yeah. And then it's like it kind of takes over from there because the other teams kind of can lose some critical mass. And it's like, you know, now these guys are the demigods that they were, you know, pinned out to be, basically. But yeah, I was going to say specifically, you guys are listening, you've heard Emmanuel remind us to think in terms of TAC Ops. And I think this is extremely relevant here. You need to listen to old Papa Emmanuel, because elites with four to six guys would ideally, in my opinion, take no positional. This is just a generalization. But with TAC Ops, you'll be tempted by positional secondaries, but there's too much typically to manage with surviving, with positioning for defense and offense, like simultaneously and doing a primary, you know, without them scoring too much, you know, ahead and stuff like that. So, you know, you're kind of wanting to take kill-based secondaries and stuff with these guys, I would say, typically, you know, is kind of what they want to do because they're so efficient at that. You look at intercessors double tapping. And speaking of elite teams, holy crap, they're back, right? This weekend at SoCal, I only had three games, I think, against non-elite teams.
It's crazy. Like I feel like I should be eating like a whole Foot Locker worth of shoes with the amount of times that I put my foot in my mouth saying that elites can't work in this game. It's all about activation control. I was proven so wrong with Legionary. Then Phobos, I think, just need to find the right pilot to really dominate. I think they do have chops. But then Intercession, Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I actually got tabled by Intercession. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I had not one model remaining at the end of that game, one of these games. I was just going to say really quickly, this team in the heart of the cards, you look and you see, you know, what is it, 8 TAC Ops strategic ploys and tactical ploys. Mm-hmm. You see like 8 of those. With an elite team, you're typically flowcharting out 2 or 3 of those. You know, and those are kind of your bread and butter. These guys tend to, from one game to the next, they're not changing their thing too much. I'm always double tapping. You know, I'm intercessors. I'm paying for either shoot far or shoot close, something like that. You know, and they're just kind of doing that. And we'll talk about the difference that some of these other guys have. But your elite team is kind of just like rolling through the motions, and you kind of have to be disciplined for this. Because if you do attack reroll game round 1, that now means you can't double tap round 4. Oh no, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of another thing we talk about, the heart of the cards with the elites. I think that this is a component to think about, is it's like you have your core strats that you're doing over and over and over again. They're not changing very much, like I said, and you're just kind of doing those things. You know, you found where you're hedging out your advantage and efficiency, and you're just kind of hammering that in. You know, I'm shooting twice, I'm re-rolling with all my guys, whatever it happens to be for your unique team. You're kind of just doing those. There's 2 to 3 really that you're actually doing, I would say. Really quickly before moving on, I would say the quintessential elite team of 2.0. I was going to say it's either probably Death Watch or Custodes or Talents, you know.
That's so funny that I just, the random model that I pick out of the ether, because I didn't read that from your notes. The random model I pick out of the ether when you said they need to be flex. I was like, well, best flex is Deathwatch Warrior.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, the list, it's got the list building component that was really important last edition, because you needed to, you know, another thing on elites is ideally tailoring, you know, you want to tailor if you can, if the edition, you know, has that in there. But the flex on a model-by-model basis, and this is what I'm talking about, like, I think people are going to listen and go, oh, this team has flex. It's got these guys who can shoot and these guys who can do melee. And it's like, no, really bring home on a model-by-model basis, one little guy, you pick him up off the board, shooting and melee on that model. That's the ideal. You know, that's the thing that you're kind of hoping and seeing. And that's why I would say Death Watch is probably a better quintessential elite in 2.0 than like intercessors, even though intercessors I think are the stronger team. It's not Cessors because of lack of individual flex. The flex that they have is a model that has a gun and a fist, or like you look at the sergeant who has a the regular intercessor sergeant who has a long range gun and like a power fist or something like that. Like the quintessential flex that we're talking about and looking to have on that. But yeah, that's elites.
So moving on over, elites. I really wanted to talk about elites because I live and breathe commandos, and they're one of the great examples of elites for a few reasons that we'll get into. But I also spent a lot of time with Harleys, with Void Dancer Troop, and they're elites for a little bit of a different reason, but a lot of similarities as well. Again, broad strokes, 7 to 10 models, somewhere around there. You don't have enough to always win the activation game, but there's a good chance that you'll be able to keep pace with most teams on activations, or with a little bit of effort, start to match pace with a horde team or a wider team. You're not really worrying about individual models being super flexible. You start to see a lot of these jobs getting spaced out, right? You start to see more dedicated models. This is my sniper. This is my melee specialist. This is my comps. This is my medic. Like, you start to see that, but not so spread out that literally they can't do anything else, right? Where they're pretty much doing nothing other than their assigned job, right? You tend to see a little bit less durability, but that durability gets hidden. You have like 4-up saves, sometimes 5-up saves, more wounds than a horde team, but not into the double digits as often. But then you see stuff that allows for dice modification, allows for more retained saves, allows for denial of shooting. Like a lot of this hidden durability that's part of what the team can have access to. And this is where you start to see more toolbox play. It's not as deep as some teams like Pathfinders, right? Where literally they have an Ace Hardware worth of tools.
Yeah.
But you start to see toolbox play. So much like Chris was mentioning that elites, it almost becomes algorithmic, right? Much less so when you start getting to the elite level of things. They tend to be more or less 2 APL with a little bit of flexibility there. Void Dancers break that rule, much like Void Dancers break most rules of the game. They're all 3 APL, but most of the rest of the elite teams are going to be 2 APL with some exceptions. They'll have a comms, they'll have a way to get maybe 3 APL, but there's a lot of quasi 3 APL there. There's a lot like itchy fingers, quick fingers, whatever the thieving thing that the Corsairs can do. Light fingers?
Oh, sticky fingers.
Sticky fingers, light fingers, something like that.
The free action. Yeah.
The free mission action thing, right? You have Commando Comms Boy that can do something like that, but they can also dish out APL to other people as the Commando Knob can do.
Free dashes, right?
Or free dashes, free movements like the Corsairs can do that gives them quasi 3 APL. Perfect point. Yeah. So you see 2 APL models with an asterisk and a footnote that says, except when they're kind of not.
Right? Yeah.
So you have a lot of stuff like that. And there is some formulaic stuff in there, like, depending on the team, for commandos, you're always going to save 1 CP for just a scratch, right? Mm. But you're not always starting out with shush. You're not always starting out with a forward deploy. You're not always starting out or second turn daka daka. You're not always going to there's situations where their toolbox is relevant, right? Mm-hmm. That's more or less what I have to say. I mean, I guess I can go through other examples. There's also Novies. Novies is a fantastic example of Elites.
Yeah.
They are very frail models. Mm-hmm. If you're not careful with them, they are not frail, but they're hard to remove from the board because of that hidden durability. They have ways to heal themselves by praying super hard. They have ways to deny shots by praying super hard. You've seen a trend here. They have pretty decent ballistics. They be decent. They're on 3-ups. I guess because of praying really hard. Anyway, right. that's a whole other episode to complain about that. But then they also have the spread out of the jobs, right?
Yeah.
They have the Prenatus, the Cup Girl. They have the Whip Lady, they have the Condemner, all this kind of stuff. They have the split up the jobs. There's not as much flex in there. You can create a little bit of flex via equipment by giving a crack grenade and all this kind of stuff. But it's mostly things start to have designated jobs because you have the amount of bodies that you can spare that. You can have a back line and a front line and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like you're nearly double the amount of bodies as like an elite team. You know, if it's like the custodians would be 4 to 8, right? But then you now, instead of both on one guy, it's like, no, your flex is these 4 guys are shooting, these 4 are melee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And when you start to have more bodies, things like tar pitting, things like trades and that kind of stuff, they start to become a tactic that you can think about. That's not really something you don't throw an assault intercessor just to slow someone down frequently, right? Mm-hmm. You don't throw that model away. But you're not always going to do that with reckless abandon with an Elite team either. You might.
Right.
You might. You have the option now where that's really not something that you're going to be wanting to think of on your list of like, okay, it's my turn. What do I do? Kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, because these guys, where the Elite team is strong late game, I feel that these guys are strong middle game. Would you agree?
Middle and early. Yeah. Middle and yeah. early. You could like spread almost, out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like they do the early game if it's not against a horde. If it's like against an elite, they're mm-hmm. they're, you know, the early game thing. If it's against a horde, it's like they now become the middle late game thing. They're almost like
right.
a combo deck. If you guys are into MTG or like what is that? What is the beatdown thing or whatever? If you guys have heard that article.
No idea. I don't know MTG that well. But you remind me of a great point that I wanted to make. Your play style definitely does change depending on which side of the activation benefit you're on. That's one thing that I paused at a moment. I was just like, darn it. There was a thought. It fizzled out. It was the activation thing. If you're going up against an elite, then you have the luxury of waiting out and baiting out, right? But if you are going up against a horde, you have to be the one that makes plays. Those plays don't have to be reckless. They don't have to put you in extreme danger, but you have to create a scenario that's a threat that forces your opponent to respond to. You can't just pass waiting for them to move so your Rocket Boy can get a shot, because that's not going to happen. They have 4 more activations than you, or no one has 14, 14 activations, but they have several more activations than you, right? So it's a different focus, exactly like you're saying, that you almost elite, you have to shift whether you go more horde archetype or more elite archetype, depending on which side of the pendulum you're on at that moment.
Yeah, it almost feels like you look at, like, I see a lot of elite teams almost misdiagnosed in terms of power level early on. Like novitiates, I know people weren't crazy about at first. They were like, I don't know too much how these go, but it's like, it's almost like you go from average to OP depending on like that toolbox. So I think you hit the nail on the head talking about the toolboxy nature of this kind of middling archetype. You know, yeah, for sure.
So Mr. Byrnid sounds like Tyranid. Why don't you tell us about hordes?
Okay, will do. So hordes, interestingly enough, these can be a mix of shooting and melee, you know, which we've talked about before, but it's often, you see this presented as shooty horde or melee horde, typically. This is where you get a lot of like one-way leans. You know, you look at Pathfinders or something, it's like, no, they are full shooty horde, or like a Vet Guard, you know. Their melee, yeah, it's there, but it's not really anything to speak of. Shooty horde, you know, you're looking at like 11 to 14 models or so of just, I do this thing and I do it, you know, a lot of it. And you see the quality of output go down oftentimes, not all the time in some situations, but you know, it gets to be where numbers are its own quality is the thing. Like we talked about earlier, you can win games without kills, and you can get tabled, like happened to me this weekend, and still win by 6 points. Because these guys, like Emmanuel, you hit the nail on the head with your talking about, you're starting with elites to get into a territory where you're maybe sacrificing a model here and there. That's what you do with the hordes. You basically, it's like it gets to a point every game where I'm just like shoving guys, like gunners, used to be gunners. Get in there, bud. You're up. You know, they're charging into the flayed one that just reanimated to squeeze that point one more round or something to that effect.
I don't know how many people are going to remember this, but Call of Duty 2, they had a very good segment of storming Stalingrad, I think. Kind of like, almost like a storming the beach of Normandy's kind of feel, but Russian front kind of stuff. And because of the scarcity of like weapons and ammo and all that stuff during World War II, they had a very interesting segment where you're getting filed off to the front line. Like, you're right there. You have to run up a hill. You're there. And the person in front of you gets handed a gun. You get handed a clip of ammo. And that person behind you, gun. Like, not everyone gets both. And there's a guy yelling, if you have a gun, find some ammo. If you have some ammo, find a gun.
Oh, so my God.
I had that image. This is such a segue. Wow. E-man.
Hey,
what are you doing?
It fits.
But it fits. It's just like your gunner just gets handed a clip without its gun. It's just like, just go out there. Do something. Yeah. Just sent out for dead.
Absolutely. No, these guys, like I said, every game there's gets to a point where you're doing that. And it's funny because, you know, one of the biggest ways, biggest takeaways I would say on this is to score early and try to compress the other score, which is like, duh, mm-hmm. everybody's trying to do that, right? No, none is as crucial as this, because you may not score anything last round, but if you now have like leapfrogged, like, oh, 6 point turn one and 5 point turn two, and then it's like, oh crap, everything just falls apart. But that last turn, you're minus twoing the opponent, mm-hmm. Taking away two of their points somehow. That's as good mm-hmm. as you scoring it, and you win this game. You know, yeah, a lot of times at that point. So it's just something you see on there.
And that's the exact inverse of what you were saying with elites. Elites, you compress early on and then you score later.
Yeah, it's weird. And it's mm-hmm. interesting because these are the opposite, and that these are super good in the early game, I would say. They're very strong. Mm-hmm. That's where they want to be. And it's, again, it's not necessarily in terms of removal. Some have that, but it's in terms of board control and scoring. You're talking 4, 5, 6 point turn ones, very possible and often necessary, because you're going to run out of gas with these. Mm-hmm. Like, there gets mm-hmm. to be a point where you've suffered models and, or suffered losses, I should say. And it's like, uh-oh, it starts to get kind of hairy from that point. Hashtag, Craft Worlds.
show me where on the Eldar did he touch you.
Yes. No, but tends to be one of the fastest archetypes over time, like historically, which is funny because it's in flux with Elites, who kind of challenge them for this top spot quite often, because it's like, you'll see things like APL3 and Fly on the Elites that balances them out. But man, it's like, you look at something like Tau Pathfinders with two pregame dashes if you take one in the scouting phase and you've taken your recon drone, and recon mm-hmm. sweep to the side of the board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oh, I popped Mont Ka this round. Their thing is, it tends to be one time per game, I've noticed. Like, you get your mm-hmm. round of free dashes and that's it. Whereas the Alight mm-hmm. team, it's constantly there if you need it. They'll mm-hmm. be like all game. You know, you look at Craft Worlds, if they wanted to, being the Alight team, they could have free dashes every round. Whereas mm-hmm. these guys, you know, you look at Tau, it's like, okay, it's once you get it round one. Or you look at Vetguard, it's like, okay, we're doing Into the Breach. It's the beginning of the round or something like that. Something to that effect. It's just an interesting, you know, way that you see kind of the same thing, but presented in a different way. Often this edition, something that's kind of new to Kill Team 2 is 1 to 2 flagship models. Like, you'll have one hecking chonker in a build or something. Like, you look at, what would that be? Blooded would be a good example.
Okay. Or I was also thinking the Endurant from the Navis.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that,
pop them up to 11 wounds. Thing.
But it's like the most obvious thing, I think, would be probably, like, you've got all these little nobodies, you know, with Blooded. And then you've got this one focal point that's like, no, shoot me, so that these can live into turn three and win the game.
Gellerpox, too, similar in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So if I was to say, because we got to break these up into the shooty and the melee often, I would say the quintessential shooty horde is Vetguard, I think, this mm-hmm. edition. And I think that the quintessential melee is
Vetguard
Blooded.
And Pathies. I mean, you can't
do it.
Yeah, you can't disregard the shooting of Pathies.
No. Yeah, you can't, especially because the amount of damage they do. It's just like when you look at the amount of bodies, you know, being 14 instead of 12 to 13, they're just like always at that 14. And really playing that attrition game. And also, like, the guys each individually just kind of being chaff, you know? It's like, we've got a bunch of these guys. We're all going to die, but it's like, get on to points right away.
That's fair. Even their special weapons are kind of chaff because they have, like, 800 special weapons.
Yeah. It's yes. But, yeah, and I think that kind of, you know, is the thing. I think that it's kind of like when you talk about, like we mentioned earlier at the beginning, you know, looking at a team and knowing kind of what to expect. Like this is it. You know, you got the elite teams who are going to try to simplify the board state early, exist late. You've got the combo-y elite teams who are, depending on what they're going against, if they're going against a horde, they're better than you late game. If they're going against an elite team, they're better than you early game, or whatever. You know, the elite team is better early game against a horde.
Right.
Or, I mean, against a elite team. Jeez, these are hard to say. Elite. It's a tongue twister. Yeah. And it, you know, informs your thing on there, because like you look at a shooty horde, they've got 5-up saves and things like that. You've got a limited amount of time on here, so you're blitzing out and trying to score. Whereas the marine teams, you know what? You're okay late game, because if there's only 5 models with a las gun, 2-3 damage, you could survive every single one of those shooting one model likely, and be okay.
Especially when you load onto that and they show no fear and stuff like that you frequently get with lead teams. Yeah, the staying power and the benefits, and there's a big reason why I said Mark or Nurgle for Legionnaire. Big reason for that. It's that staying power and the relevance and third and fourth turning points.
Absolutely.
And we had mentioned at the beginning that there are teams that don't care about numbers as far as where they land. And there's a few standout ones. I think Kroot are elite.
I would agree.
Even though 11 activations, 11 models, they can, what's really neat, and we talked about this when we did our faction talk about them, is that they can cater to their opponent and change their playstyle based on their opponent. They can do kind of like what Hunter Clay do, which I would also call elite, even though they're now 11 models as well.
Yeah.
They can play into their opponent's weakness. Where a traditional horde does the horde thing. They're the shooty horde. They can't say, okay, well, you can do shooting, but you're bad at melee, so I'm going to do melee into you. It's like, a horde army's not going to be able to do that. They have their pony, and they're going to go to the show with that pony.
No, I think you're spot on. I think one of the biggest things that would make me point to Kroot and say elite team is they have some kind of shenanigans where, like, you know, a bunch of points off one kill with their tac op stacking and, you know, all that stuff.
I love that.
And that's a hallmark, right? That's a hallmark of elite, is efficient tac ops. Look at the quintessential thing would be novitiates, where it's like, okay, I have 2 guns on this team, basically. You know, I mean, they have more, but I'm speaking in hyperbole. The flamers, if I kill you with this, I get points. And oh, by the way, I'm going to be on this point. You have to shoot me off of this or you lose the game. But oh, if you shoot me off of this, it's points. So like that's kind of the hallmark of the elite, is just like they're super efficient in terms of scoring. Like they have the free mission action or something like that, or just hyper efficient tac ops that they can do, or, you know, and the team is well rounded. So it's like the archetypes that they do have, they could pretty much actually accomplish all of those things, you know, from their thing. And where, like, an elite team, I would say never go for positional unless you draw it. Oh, no, you're doing a random attack op draw for a tournament. Those guys can do that. They've got the bodies to start to do that. And it's a great place because, like, we were talking about Robert's Craft World earlier. I mean, one of the things is, like, when you start to get into a big team, like a horde, it's so hard to deploy without, you know, having anybody within 2 inches of each other. These guys, you have the bodies, but you also aren't at that critical mass yet where you're getting nailed, right? So it's just a super, I don't know, super powerful thing to do. One thing,
and then, just to jump in on this whole teams not obeying the numbers, you have the new Necrons. I think they're 8 models. I'd classify them as elite. The 2 extra models that they get, the Plasma Sight and all that kind of stuff, I mean, you could say arguably it's like, okay, well, I mean, it's because those tiny little models don't really amass as much as the other models, sure. But it's more so about the kind of slow and steady attrition gameplay and persisting to the end with healing and reanimations and all that kind of stuff, and being more about compression and scoring late game. And then
melee and
another
on every guy. I never thought of that. You're exactly right. That is an elite team. I mean, the other 2 guys, they're there to support your elite dudes. That's all that they are.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, you also have teams that can span the spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. You have Warp Coven, who can go elite, much better now with the balance patch. Yes. Or they can go elite. They can't really go Horde, obviously. Then you have, what's another one? Compendium Tyranids. You can go six warriors if you want to. Or you can go a ton of Gene Steelers. You can go a ton of Gaunts if you want to. There's multiple ways that you can flex based on your roster and your muster, depending on what your matchup is, which would be more beneficial for you. So that's the extra tidbits I wanted to throw in there. Just being aware of not the numbers defining, but where they will excel and where they're kind of demeanor on the board will define whether they're elite, or Horde.
Exactly. Yeah, there's more than just numbers. But one thing I was going to say, because, you know, this topic that you bring up about like the outliers that are different, I think that there are things in this game you can point to and say, okay, this is X, it's a Horde or whatever it happens to be, but it's like a different presentation from everything else. Mm-hmm. I almost think that those are either invariably stronger or weaker than their peers. Like, instantly they either become almost busted or non-factor, and it's basically because what happens is it's either something, this difference that is pushing them over the top, you know, and now they're hyper competing, you know, into an area where they technically maybe shouldn't have, or, you know, if it's something that's different, it could also be a missing fundamental. Like, okay, this is supposed to have this to operate, does not have this, therefore cannot function. You know, nature selected you for extinction. You know, and luckily we've been good about, you know, that with balance this edition. But yeah, something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and a perfect example of that is, I mean, players are finding success with Blooded, but they're largely melee, and they don't have a good delivery for melee. Into the Dark is a great delivery for melee, but that's not part of that's not part of the Blooded team. So they do suffer a bit on that because they're lacking that one thing, that delivery mechanism that they really did need to make them soar at being a melee Horde.
Yeah, because melee Horde, it involves like melee, but it's like, okay, if I'm not in melee ever, if I'm just standing there getting shot, then that's precisely a failure in terms of the fundamental that they're trying to accomplish. Last thing I would say really quickly, if you're a TO and you're listening, this can help you balance for what's weak in the format. You can do this via a number of objectives, because a few objectives on the board favorable for elite teams, lots of objectives favorable to Hordes, and objectives that take a mission action to score, those are most favorable to elites, since, you know, they get the free mission actions a lot of times or something like that. They're just efficient, where Hordes are APL2 and might have needed both of their activations to get on that point in the first place. Or, you know, elites, hey, they want to use those actions to simplify that board state via kills, get to where they need to be, which is in cover or on a point, something like that. And I don't think it's a coincidence that elite teams often have those free mission actions. So if you're a TO and, you know, you've just listened to this, you kind of know if there's something struggling in your area or something to that effect or something too good, something you can do. Change the number of objectives and the type. Like, is it a mission action? Is it not? This and that. It's just an interesting thing that you can take home from this.
I love that. Basically, a stopgap between balance patches, the TO can help with the balance by catering the missions that are being played. To help the balance. That's a really great tip. I want to highlight how great a tip that was, because that's not changing the game. That's right. Not modifying. That's not doing anything to homebrew the game to try and fix some sort of weird balance thing. It's just being very deliberate with your mission selection to make sure that that big bad who is running rampant that hasn't gotten nerfed yet is not allowed to do that on your watch.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like, even if you're not directly affecting the outcome as a TO, it's something to be aware of. Like, hey, wow, mm-hmm. elites have won the last, you know, so many missions or something. What am I playing? Oh, it's this, you know, Into the Dark thing where there's the three missions on the board, or the one mission, right, or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
Oh, okay, that might be why. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. My name's Chris, also known as Birinid on YouTube. Check me out there if you guys like, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And I've been Emmanuel. You can find me on my Instagram at eman.paints, and you can find me and my buddy Alex on YouTube at Strategic Advantage.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Killzone Podcast. Your home for real talk for competitive kill team. Brought to you by the Frontline Gaming Network. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.